Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Chet. We're holding at the Yehelika Mishnah at the bottom of Chof Zayin Amud Beis. Kol ha-yotzei min ha-eitz, ein madikin bo ela pishtan. V'chol ha-yotzei min ha-eitz, ein ha-metami tumat o'alim ela pishtan. So now we're talking about the making of the wicks. And Rashi understands kol ha-yotzei min ha-eitz to mean anything that is cellulose. And that would mean that you wouldn't be able to make a wick out of cotton, which Tosfos says that's crazy. Everybody makes wicks out of cotton, and those are the best wicks. Why in the world would the Mishnah be talking about eitz referring to cellulose? Eitz means eitz. And that indeed, of course, is the way that we paskin. Eitz means eitz particularly, and therefore what type of wick would you make out of eitz? Those were the references all the way at the beginning of the parak, and actually were part of the transition from the previous parak, where we talked about the amrunita. The amrunita is this basting material which comes between the bark and the wood itself. And that's what it's referring to. So the only thing that you can use for a wick that is called eitz, now why is pishtan called eitz? Isn't pishtan also just cellulose, but it's just a plant? And that is because the Gemara is going to show us that the Torah refers to pishtan as eitz. And this is one of the primary issues, as Tosfos points out, it's similar to the eitz hadas, which even though we talk about it as chita, but chita was considered to be eitz at that point. So there's a primal definition of eitz that doesn't necessarily follow the halachic definition, legabe bracha, of borei priya eitz, which is a completely different issue. It certainly doesn't follow the biological determination, the way we would say it's botany, the way we would put it scientifically. Okay, in any event, continues the Mishnah. And all of a sudden we have this, once again, another strange interrelationship between the concept of Shabbos, Ptilot, Ner Shabbos, and Shemen, and Nerot, and Tuma. Again, strange, strange, strange. Which, of course, as you can imagine, once we're talking about Ohalim, guess what Ohal that's really being Maramis to? You got it, which is where it all starts, which is the menorah. This is not just some kind of esoteric weird thing. The Gemara, as we're about to see, actually learns all of these dinim from the Mishkan itself and from the materials that were used in the Mishkan, where they're called Ohel. So we're going to get back once again to the Mishkan. Anyway, but what makes you say that we call Pishtan eitz at all? I don't even know why we're talking kol ha-yotzei min ha-eitz. Is mitami tumas olam? Pishtan is an eitz? Omer Mar Zutra, it absolutely is, because the Omer Akra, v'yihe la tamagaga, v'titmenem b'pishtei ha-eitz. Now it says b'feresh that when the Meraglim came, they were hidden by Rachav underneath eitz. What type of eitz? Pishtei ha-eitz. Okay, so now let's move on to what it says in our Mishnah, where we claim that there's a special din of Tumas Ohalim. Now let me clarify that. Tumas Meis Be'ohel is a lot different than Tumas Ohalim. What we're talking about here is whether an actual tent will become Tame. Everything that we've spoken about until now is a reference to Tumas Ohal that refers to some body or some kelim that are inside of a covered area, and that's called Tumas Ohal. But the covering of that area is not normally something that's Mekabel Tumah. And yet over here, the Mishnah is saying that in a tent made of Pishtan, the actual tent would be Mekabel Tumah. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, didn't we just have Kol HaKelim maybe Imet HaTumah Ba'ovi HaMardeya? And the whole point over there was that the Kli itself, that is Mahil, is Tameh. Isn't that the same thing as the Ohal over here? No, it's not. And the reason that it's not is two possible reasons. One, according to some Rishonim, is that we're talking specifically over here. Now, all of you have been learning Kalim will immediately recognize this. We're talking specifically over here of a tent that is connected to the ground. Well, we know that anything that's Mechubel Karka no longer has a din of a Kli, and therefore would not be Mekabel Tumah, correct? So that would explain very simply why we are not talking about the Ovi Hamardea issue here. The other explanation is that we're talking here where the person sets aside the tent to be used specifically as a tent. In other words, he has a sheet of Pishtan, and he wants to use it as a covering, not as a kli. Once it's covering, it is no longer going to have the din of a kli because it doesn't have a base kibble any longer, and it's no longer a beket. Therefore, the new idea, and which we're going to need a pasuk for, to tell me that the tent per se could be mekabel tuma is a brand new concept of tuma. It's amazing. It's an extension of all of our ideas of kelim all of a sudden because of gezerat haketuv, which we're going to be examining. Okay, so how do we know that this is true? Minala. Omar Rabbi Elazar. Well, actually, it's a gezerah shava. We learn it out of the Mishkan itself. The Mishkan did not have any yotze min ha'etz. Let's think about what the Mishkan was made out of. So we had the yiriot sheish mashzar on the bottom. We had 10 of those yiriot. And then we had, above that, we had the yiriot that were made of izim. Those izim are talking about, they were tavui on the A's and so on, but that is talking about hair from the goat. That's not obviously a yotze min ha'etz. And on top of that, we had orot elim ba'odamim, the orot techashim. So there, we're talking about skins. Now in the Mishkan, it says that there were orot, fine. It says that there were izim, fine. But the only thing that's from the eights that's on the Mishkan, that's called a ohel, is the sheish, which is pishtan. Now, in the parsha of Tumas Meis, it says, Zot ha-Torah adam ki yamut bo ohel, evichtivata vayifroz et ha-ohel ala Mishkan, mal ha-alan shal pishtan korui ohel, afkan shal pishtan korui ohel. So if you're talking about the actual din of the ohel ha-meit, then it's telling us that it's the same as the only other place that we find such a concept. And that place is only in the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, all we had was Pishtan, which is Sheish. So therefore, it's clear that if we're going to define a Ohel, it's got to be a Ohel like this. So if that's the case, our Mishnah is based on this pasuk. Asks the Gemara, but why does that help? Because if you're learning it directly out of the Mishkan, it should be limited to the way it is in the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, it says, we learned this out from Psukim, that the threads have to be twisted, and they have to be six separate strands that you then twist together. And it's all complicated way of making the material of the Mishkan. If that's the only source that we have, then why not say over here that we're talking about also, yes, Pishtan, but only Pishtan, which is Shuzurin, Vechutin, Kafu Shisha. Well, that's because we have, in the din of the Ohel HaMeis, we have a repetition of the word bo'ohel, kol asher bo'ohel, and so on. So it mentions the word ohel two separate times. Actually, more than that, but one is introductory. So ohel, ohel is riba, that any type of sheish, even if it isn't shazur, and if it isn't kofor shisha, it's still going to be mekabel tuma. But wait. If you're going to be marba with ohel ohel, so then maybe it should be marba other materials. What do you mean marba other materials? So then what's the point of the gezera shava? There would be no issue of learning out from the Mishkan to Tumas ohel. Since there is a gezera shava, it's got to be telling me that the place to understand the material is the Mishkan. The way to apply the material is to expand it with ohel ohel. So now we see that the din of a tuma in an ohel is referring to the ohel itself from the Mishkan. But why not say that just like over there by the Mishkan, we also have krashim, and the krashim are called ohel, so because the whole thing, after all, are called Mishkan, and we're comparing over here Mishkan and ohel, so why not say that even wood could also, straight out wood, I mean, you're talking about shitim, atze shitim, so but maybe any wood would be mekabel tuma. So understands Rashi. Tosfos says that doesn't make any sense. The krashim per se are not called an ohel ever, or a mishkan directly. They are called tzidei hamishkan, because it says to let the additional lisroach al tzidei hamishkan, we have the additional yiriot, which are longer than the underlying yiriot of sheish. It says, yes, so ruach atzidei ha-mishkan. But that's not Mishkan. Therefore, Tainus Tosfos, the point over here is a very simple point. The Torah does not refer to a material alone as being a tent. What good is a sheet? The sheet's not a tent. It needs something to hold it up. So in the Mishkan, that which holds it up is the Krashim. Then if that's the case, maybe drink, Barnea, drink. Maybe the idea of a Mishkan is specifically if you have these types of Krashim, then if you're covered with Sheish, then good. That's very good, Barnea, good. Make sure it's warm and you feel better.
Hi.
I'm glad to see you're following instructions today and remembering. So perhaps it means that the only time that Sheish is Mekabel Tumah in an oil is when it has Krashim, the same way that the Mishkan has Krashim. Answers the Gemara, no, because it says the Krashim are Krashim La Mishkan, which means that the Krashim are themselves not the Mishkan. They are there to service the Mishkan. So the Mishkan, per se, that's called the Mishkan. But the Krashim are not called the Mishkan. They're only called the Tfor, the Mishkan. Reb Barnea, please. Barnea. There we go. Okay, so if that's the case, says the Gemara, then the same thing should be true. If you're going to darshan that word, la, it says, V'yasita michseh la ohel. So that means the orote lima adamim and the orote chashim that were put on the top are also not meant to be included because they are made as a covering for the ohel. Now, in reality, there are three different words that are used for these various levels of cover. There is the michseh. The michseh is the orot, which are skins. There's the ohel, which is the Yiriot Izim. And then there's the Mishkan, which is always referred to as Sheish, the ones on the bottom. So the three levels are actually Mishkan, Ohel, Michseh. But in aggregate, these are compared to each other, as Tosis points out, in the Hakomas HaMishkan, and therefore we understand them to be compared to each other. The problem is that when it uses the word servicing the Ohel, then it's clearly telling us, but this is not per se the Ohel. But if that's the case, you would be excluding the skins of the Michseh, that they would not be considered an Ohel at all. But if that's the case, how do you explain what Rabbi Elazar asked? Rabbi Elazar asked a question that has absolutely no meaning if you're going to be Doresh that letter, La Ohel. Because Rabbi Elazar's question was, Or Behemah Tameah, will it be metame ba'ol hamet or not? So you have non-kosher animal. The basis of this question is that we have found, I'm assuming, is that we have found that a kosher animal skin, orot elim odamim, are metame ba'ol because they are considered to be part of the Mishkan. So what Rabbi Elazar wanted to know is whether this is also true of a non-kosher animal. Would the skin of the non-kosher animal also be shayach to Kabbalah's Tuma? But now you're telling me that we're even excluding the Orot Elim Odamim. So if we're excluding them, what's he basing his question on? No skin would be Makabal Tumas Olim, right? So if you're telling me that Hashtar Behima Tohorah is not going to be Matame, what would be the sense of thinking that or of Tohorah is not Matame? What's the sense of asking whether Or Behima Tumeah is Matame? So if Rabbi Elazar is asking this, he understands that despite the fact that it says Michseh La Ohel, it still does not mean to exclude the Michseh from the definition of the subsuming concept of Ohel. So then the same thing should be true, getting back to the Krashim. You made the Krashim for the Ohel, for the Mishkan. That doesn't mean they're not part of the Mishkan. Ah, that's different, says the Gemara. It's different because the truth is the word would mean that. But the Torah has gone out of its way to bring the Michseh back under the general rubric called Ohel, where, Dichtiv, V'nas'u et yiriot ha-mishkan, v'et Ohel mo'ed, Michseyu u'michsey ha-tachash asher alav. Now, talking about its cover and the cover of the tachash is obviously meant to compare the top to the middle. Top to the bottom means the top to the middle over here, of course, because it's actually comparing the Michseh HaTachash Asher Alav, to the Michseh, meaning of the Izim. So just like the Tachtonis Kori Oil, which we already saw that the Yiriot Izim are called oil because it says that, Le'ahel Al HaMishkan. So that's the thing that was called oil, the Yiriot Izim. So just like it's called an Ohel, so too is the upper one, meaning the Yiriot of, that were made out of the Orote Lima Odamim, the Orote Chashim, they're also called and Ohel. So therefore, Rebbe Elazar is 100% right. Rebbe Elazar is saying, okay, can we expand that to include even Behemah Tmeah? But the other idea that Krushim are not included is also right, because the Torah never was machzir the wood to be Tamei from the Ohel. Gufa. Boy, Rabbi Elazar. Let me just get back to that question that Rabbi Elazar had, because I don't understand it. He wanted to know whether skin that was made out of a non-kosher animal is shayach to tumat ohalim or not. Now, what's he essentially asking? Maika miboyle, if we do not have a makor in the Mishkan, so why would he think that they would be makabel tuma? Omer Ravada Barava, excuse me, what do you mean we don't have a makor in the Mishkan? Do you know what the orot tachashim were? What's a tachash? I don't know what a tachash is. Maybe a tachash is an alligator. I mean, I don't know. Maybe some kind of animal, which is completely tamei, and yet we were using orot tachashim in the Mishkan. So maybe that's the point. If the tachash is considered to be a behema tamei, then we would have a makar in the Mishkan proper for orot behema tamei to be makabel tuma. And therefore, says Ravada Barava, that was what he was asking. Is the tachash that existed only during that time? Nobody's ever seen a tachash since, and there was never any mention of a tachash before. So we're going to see it. It's especially gilui from the time of the Mishkan. Was that Tamehaya or Tahorhaya? Says Rabbi Yossi, what kind of weird question is that? We would not use an animal that's Tameh in the Mishkan, would we? Do we not have a brisa that says, Lo hukshru l'malachat shamayim, ela or behemah Torah bilvad. You're only allowed to utilize something that comes from a kosher animal. So there's your answer. Obviously, I mean, if it says melechat shamayim, I mean, that seems to be talking about the Mishkan. And if that's the case, it's telling me that the tachash must have been tahar. And if it's tahar, then what basis would we possibly have for extending the din of orot into orot that are not kosher? Asks Rab Abba, what do you do with this price, if that's the way you understand it? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, there were actually two completely different coverings, which means that there were four coverings, Sheish, Izim, Orot Elim, and on top of that, Orot Echashim. So you had the Mikseh had two layers. One layer was made of Orot Elim or Damim, and one was made of Orot Echashim. Rabbi Nechemiah says, no. This is talking about one cover, which was partially one and partially the other. So it was half and half, and Mikseh Echad Haya. And you know what the part of the tachash looked like? The part of the tachash looks like a something called the Tla Ilan. Now, a Tla Ilan actually is a non-kosher animal which has a lot of scintillating colors on it. And I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it says over here that's a Tla Ilan. So, I mean, a Tla Ilan is not a kosher animal, and it's still used as the orot of the Mishkan. So obviously, Rabbi Yosef's understanding of lo hukshu l'melechat shamayim is not referring to the Mishkan. No, he didn't say it is a Tla Ilan. Read what he said. He said it is similar to a Tla Ilan, meaning that it's similar to this animal that we know of that has many beautiful colors, and yesh bo gvanim harbe, but he didn't say it is a Tla Ilan. A Tla Ilan itself is tame, but the tachash is tar. Rav Yosef, whoa. Now I finally understand the Targum. Remember, Rav Yosef was a tremendous bookie in Targum? I finally understand the Targum. It was driving me nuts. Why in the world do we actually translate in the Targum the tachash as a sasgona? The reason we translate it as a sasgona is because it is similar to the Tla Ilan, but we don't call it a Tla Ilan because it isn't. So because of that, the idea of the sas gona means sas bigvanim arbe. The animal is so expressive of its joy in its colors. In other words, this is an animal that makes very much use of the coloration, sort of like a similar to a peacock in a bird, where the first thing that anybody would look at would be the way that this bird is all tied up in its beautiful, beautiful designs, right? I mean, it's going around strutting like a peacock. So this animal would strut like a Tla Ilan, and it would be very happy, sas gvanim, be very happy with its many colors. Anyway, So we're saying, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yosef, that we have absolutely no marker over here to the idea of something that is at Beima Tameya to be possibly Tamei Ba'oral. Rava says, I got news for you. An Or Beima Tameya is Metame Tumas Oyalim, and the way that we know it is as I'm going to prove it to you. Now, you have to have a little bit of patience to hear my proof, but if you could sit still for 3 minutes, you will understand my proof. So here's the way I want to prove it, okay? Don't stop me in the middle, says Rava, because each part doesn't make sense on its own. We have to get to the end of this, all right? So let's start off from the beginning. We have the Braita Legabit Tzoras. So getting back to Tzoras again. Man, oh man, these interwoven sugyas, they keep coming back and hitting you. So it says over there, again, we talked about the Pasuk in terms of the word Obeged. But the Pasuk also says O-Or, right? O-Bechol Meleches Or. Now, we have the same drasha about the or. It could have just said or, and instead it says o be'or. All right, what is that coming to be marba? Because always, always a reboy. That is coming to be marba or be matmea. That if that was had saras in it, it would also be tome betumas saras, and it's also coming to include the or that became loqui betsaras after it was given over to the kohen. So over here, that is the opposite of the way the Pasuk says it. The Pasuk says that there was or should had a negatzaras, and you bring it to the Kohen. But what about if you gave it to the Kohen, and then the Kohen, as he's looking at it, sees that it's developing tzaras? That should not be included. Therefore, we have an extra reboy to tell me, bi'or, that even that is included. Are you showing us something, Akiva? Or, no, okay. So therefore, that also is included. Now, also, how do we know that if you cut a little piece of every type of different beged that's mentioned in over there, which is the beged semro, bepishtim, or beor, and so on, how do we know that if you make one beged out of pieces from all of these, that that's also included? Talmud lomar, or bechol melechesor. If you put all the pieces together of leather, it's also. So when it comes to tzaras, it could be tame, it could be tor, it doesn't matter, right? Fine. Now, don't think that I'm trying to tell you to learn out from Tzaras to Tumas Ohel. I'm not, okay? Obviously, Ikela Mifrach, continues Rava. Now, you could say this doesn't prove anything to me about Tumas Ohel, because I could say Negoyim are very chomer. What's the chomer of Negoyim? We already know. Just Yeshiva Erev, the warp and woof threads themselves are Matami, even if they're not woven. And that is certainly not true about the Tuma of an Ohel. So therefore, you can't learn out Tumas Ohel. Okay, fine. But this is my first step towards my wonderful proof, says Rava, that Or Behemat Tmeya is going to be Mekabel Tumas Ohelim. Okay, now have patience. Okay, now I'm going to my second part. All right, Ella, I would say, let's learn it out from Tuma Sheret. Now, there's a price about Tuma Sheret also, because it says by the Shratzim, Or, so the Pasuk says, Or, and that would mean to me, Ein li ela or beima tohora. How do I know that includes even or beima tmeya? Therefore, the Pasuk adds, o or, okay? So you see that it's possible to have too much sherets on something that's made out of rabbit skin. Now, this also is a terrible problem for the Rebbe, because there have been cases where the shtreimel ended up being mekabel tuma, as when people made an oil out of 300 shtreimlach put together in the middle of a beis hamedrash. So apparently, according to this, if a sheretz will touch it, it will be mekabel tuma. So yeah, I'll bet you think I want to learn out from here, right? No, I'm not so silly. Obviously, you can't learn out from Shratzim to Tumas Oil, because Tumas Oil meaning Tuma of the oil itself. Because Ipkala Mifrach, Mala Shratzim, Shkemetamim Bika Adasha. Remember, Shratzim are very, very chomer. This tiny little lentil is sufficient to be a shear of Tuma. Masha Inkin, when it comes to Tumas Oilim, you have to have a Kizayis Minames. Okay, I'm not a fool, says Rava. Now, I'm going to bring you my proof now. Okay. So let's try to learn from Shratzim. You say, no, you can't learn from Shratzim. It's Tamei Vikadasha. Very good. Why don't we now say, but Negoyim Yolchichu. When it comes to Negoyim, Kadasha is not Tamei, and nonetheless, Orot Beima Tmea is included in the Parsha of Tzaras. So that proves that the Adasha issue is not the issue. And we'll go back to Tsaras. So you'll say, yeah, but Tsaras is different because of the fact that Shesiv Erev. Okay, so then I'll tell you that Shratzim Yochichu, which where Erev is not Mitame. And therefore, here's my proof. I meant all along to tell you a Mahatzad, V'chozradin. Lo Rizek Rizeh. Okay, now there's one Tzad Hashave between them. We have two totally different issues, one of which is Sheretz and one of which is Tsaras. In both of them, the Torah has brought out the fact that an Or Behemah Tameah is given the same as the din of Or Behemah Tahara. Therefore, I am going to say, let's take the common denominator. The common denominator is that the Torah views Or Behemah Tameah in the same way that it views Or Behemah Tahara. And therefore, if we're going to extend the din of Orot, and we want to know what does the Torah mean by Orot in the Tumas Olim, despite the fact that the only model for Or that we have in Tumas Olim is from the Mishkan, where we're assuming that everything was made out of Or Behemah Tahara, nonetheless, the halacha is that actually, or if or is tame, then I'm going to make or behemah tameah as or behemah tahara, QED. Says Rava Mibarnish, that's not a good proof. Why does he think that's a good proof? There is another tzad hashaveh. Remember, wherever we can find a lowest common denominator between the two, we use that instead of making an inference all over the place. Well, there happens to be a common denominator. What is the common denominator? That both of these cases have a special din of chumrah that you do not need a kezias to be metame. Mashenkin, when it comes to a mace, you do need a kezias. And therefore, the tzad hashava shaban is that both tzaras and shrotzim are metame in pachot mikezayit. One of them is the size of a kadasha, one of the sizes kegris, but the bottom line is you can't compare it to tumas mace, tomar b'meitche inu metame ela b'kezayit. Nah. This was a good try, Rava, but it's all wrong. Now, let me give you the real answer, says Rava Mibarnish. I have the pshat. Elam, Rava Mibarnish, here is the real way that you can define the fact that a or behema temea actually would be makabel tuma the way that you were insisting, but not from your proof. My proof. My proof goes like this. It's a kal v'chomer from the note, the notzah shel izim. In the Ohel Moed. Now, here's my kal v'chomer. If notes are shalizim, which is not metame b'negoyim, because it says beferish only temru pishtim is metame b'negoyim, is nonetheless metame b'ohel hamet, which we learn out from the Mishkan, because they're called the Yiriot Izim, are called beferish an ohel. As a matter of fact, they're the main ohel. The Ahel al HaMishkan is a reference to the Yiriot Izim. Or Bema Tmeah, which is Metame Ben Egoim, is a Beferish of a Pasek, Eino Din Shemetame Ba'ol HaMeis, for sure should be Kavachomer, that it is Tame Ba'ol. Therefore, I think you're right, but here's the real proof. Wait a second. So then, what are we going to do with the Brisa, the Rabbi Yosef's Brisa? Lo Hushru Melech HaShemayim Ala Or Bema Torah Bilvad. I mean, if you're telling, what is the point of saying that? I mean, the Braisa is obviously coming to teach me some kind of halacha, right? Lamai Yilchata. I mean, if the only point of the Braita was to discuss the curious historical oddity of what exactly was the Tachash, and it had no halachic implications, then just say what your opinion is. If you want to say the Tachash is a kosher animal, so say in a braita, Tachash Ohaya Bimei Moshe, Beima Torah Haita. What is this business? Lo Hukshru, B'Lumachat Shamayim, Elor Behema. I mean, you're obviously coming to tell me a din. Well, what's the din? If the din is not to tell me a halacha, namely, that Orot Behema Tomei'ah are not included in the din of Tumas Ayolim, so then what the heck are you saying? Says the Gemara, man, you had a completely misunderstanding of the whole sugya. Rabbi Yosef made this mistake of thinking that Lo Hukshru Melechet Shamayim is referring to the Mishkan. It has nothing to do with the Mishkan at all. It's talking about tefillin. Lo Hukshru Melechet Shamayim. Remember what Rabbi Meir tells, right? Bini, Melachtecha Melechet Shamayim. Lavlar Anochi. Melachtecha Melechet Shamayim. He's there. That's the pshat Melechet Shamayim. Making tefillin. That's what it's referring to. So it's telling me that the klaf, this is what we assume at this point, that the klaf which is the skin that you're writing on, of the tefillin, have to be from a kosher animal. Tefillin? Tefillin is a pasuk. It has to be from a kosher animal, for God's sake. It says, beferish, v'yulot otofot, bein einecha l'man tiyeh Torat Hashem beficha. That means it's got to be, Torat Hashem has to be something that you can crunch in your mouth. You have to be able to eat the parshas of your tefillin. Well, if they weren't kosher, how could you eat them? So obviously, they have to come from a kosher animal. What do I need? I need a braita to tell me a pasuk that any child knows? It says, beficha means mina mutar beficha. It has to come from something that you're allowed to eat. So how could it be coming to tell me that? No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean the parshas of the tefillin. I meant the batim of the tefillin. So the actual boxes that are the tefillin, the batim, have to be made out of kosher leather. And why would I not know that from Laman Tiyeh Toras Hashem Beficha? Because Toras Hashem Beficha means there's something written on them. There's some Torah on them. Not Stam, that it's a mitzvah b'alma. There's nothing written on the actual bayit, is there? So that's coming to tell me that it has to be kosher. Wait a minute, that's not true. What do you mean there's nothing written on it? There is something written on it. There's the shin. And that shin, together with the dalad and the yud, that are in the Ritzuas, that spells out the Shem Hashem, which is Torah, and it should therefore need to be Laman Tiyeh Toras Hashem Beficha. And that Shin Shel Tefillin is Halacha L'Meshim Sinai, so it's included in Laman Tiyeh Toras Hashem Beficha. Oh, okay, fine. So it's not the parchments, it's not the batim. You know what it's referring to? It's referring to the hair that you use when you wrap up the actual parshas of the tefillin. You can't just put the parshas of the tefillin into the bayit. There's a halacha l'meshim Sinai that you need to wrap them with sa'ar, and you need to sew up the box afterwards with the gidim of the same animals that you used to make them. That's what it's referring to. Yeah, okay, but that's halacha l'meshim Sinai also. So if it's halacha l'meshim Sinai, so then what do I need this thing from Rabbi Yosef, the Tanya? Tfilin merubaot, or halacha l'meshim Sinai, nichrachot b'sa'aron v'nitfarot b'gidan, is also halacha l'meshim Sinai. So what? What that means is that we're comparing the two, it has to be from the same one, misa'aron. So then if we've already decided that the bayit have to be from orot that are kosher, then that means using the same hair, the same gidim, from the same animal that you made the actual bayit. Then that means it's a given, therefore, that it needs to be from a orbe matera. Okay. It's referring to the tefillin, but it's not referring to the cloth. It's not referring to the bayit. It's not referring to the sa'ar. It's not referring to the gidim. You know what it's referring to? The ritzuais. The ritzuais of the tefillin have to be made from a kosher animal. But that's also halacha l'meshim Sinai. Didn't Rabbi Yitzchak say, ritzuot shechorot are halacha l'meshim Sinai? Yes. But all that says is that they have to be black. Black is beautiful. But where does it say over there that they have to be tohorot? Does it say they have to be from a kosher animal? That is what the Braisa is talking about. Nothing to do with the Mishkan. Everything to do with the batim of the tefillin, which of course are related anyway to the Mishkan, the Bayit, and the Beis HaMikdash. But in any event, it has nothing to do with the halacha that Rava and Rava Mibarnish both said, that there is a din of Tumas Oyalim, even on Or Behema Temeah. That has nothing to do with the din of tefillin that have to be from Or Behema Tohora. Anyway, but so then getting back to the historical curiosity, what is the business about the Tachash? Was the Tachash kosher or was it not? So my Haviyala the Tachash haya b'mei Moshe. Rabbi Elah, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. You know, Rabbi Meir used to say that the Tachash that appeared during the days of Moshe was a new species, a separate species that had never been identified. It was a Briya b'fnei atzma haya. And they never could decide what it was. They weren't sure whether it had a din of a chaya or a beima. And the nafkamina would be legabe kisui hadam and legabe the dinim of the chelev. And I know from a tradition that it was a unicorn and it had one horn in its forehead. Keren achat haitalo b'mitzchon. And it only was available during that brief time of the Asiyas HaMishkan. It was only Lefisha Nizdameno LaMoshe. They made the Mishkan, and then it was Ganuz. So it was one of those things that was not meant to be exposed for general human usage. Now, I want to suggest that the answer is very simple, says Reish Lakish. If it says that it had a horn, then that must mean that it's a kosher animal. Because remember back in Nida, we said that anything that has a kranot also has the other simonim, has simonim of kashrus, and its hooves are split, and so on. Remember that we had the list of all the things, kol sheyeshbo X, yeshbo Y, but kol sheyeshbo Y doesn't necessarily have X. That was one of them. So if it has horns, then it should be a kosher animal, and therefore we should know that it was kosher, and that would, by the way, if you're going to ask me, continues the Gemara, you're going to ask me, now wait a minute, I mean, the Mishnah in Nida was referring to horns. This doesn't have horns, and it's a unicorn. Maybe unicorns are different, right? Not true. Because the primal animal that was horned, Lodoros, which is an ox, it originally was created with one horn. Because Rav Yehuda says the shor that Adam HaRishon brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a korban had only one horn. And it says, Beferish, Vatitav LaHashem Mishor Par, Makrin Mafris. Here again, the Torah is comparing Parsot to Kronot, which again is an indication in the Mishnah in Nida that there's a relationship between the horn and the hoof. Now, if Adam's par, which was certainly kosher and was the mocker of all of the parim that came afterwards, so then that means that when it says horn, and that relates to Mafreset Parsa, it can even have one horn. Wait, where do you see one horn? I don't understand. Makrin. Makrin just means with horns. What makes you say it means one horn? Tarte mashva, that could, I mean, it's more mashva, two horns to me than one. Yeah, but it isn't written with a yud, is it? It's not written with makrin, it's written mikeren. So it's as if it says mikeren, the animal that has only one keren. Okay, but now, I mean, getting back to what you were saying, Rabila, so then we can have a raya, that it's also a min behema. Because if the model that you're using for a unicorn is a behema, then why does Rabbi Meir say, and the Chachomim couldn't make up their minds, whether it was a behema or whether it was a chaya, we have over here the model. The original unicorn is a behema, and therefore it should be perfectly okay. It's interesting that the unicorn is universally seen as an innocent Gan Eden-type pre-chait creature, to wit, Harry Potter. So therefore, and all your kids' books, right? The unicorn is the supreme innocence, the beautiful unicorn with all of its beautiful colors usually has. It's a Saskavan. So all of the mythological elements are put together in some type of very primal human consciousness of something meaningful to a one-horned animal that is very colorful and bright and innocent. But in any event, that would mean that it's not a chaya. It's by definition a behema. So what was the question? The question was, you're ignoring the fact that we have another animal which is definitely a chaya, and it's also a unicorn. And that is the keresh that we learned about in Chulin. We had the whole discussion, the Caesar wanted the keresh and so on, which is this also mythological animal. So even the Ika keresh, which is a type of chaya and not the type of behema, and it also only has one keren. So maybe the model for the Sasgavan is actually that, in which case it would be a minchaya. So therefore, the Chachamim couldn't decide. Is it a minchaya or is it a min behema? And now we introduce the next Mishnah with Sir Richard's wonderful words, which further explore the strange interrelationship between Begadim, Neira Shabbos, and the, drink it, you're right. Neira Shabbos and the idea Bichlal of the deep relationship of special begotten, both with Mishkan and with Shabbos. Drink, Barnea, drink. Great. Ptilat HaBeget. Now, suppose you make a wick in a lamp, not out of a twisted thread, but out of an actual piece of cloth. You take this piece of cloth, you fold it over until it becomes like very thin, small, like a wick. You put it into a lamp, and now you've got yourself a lovely wick. But usually you would singe the wick before Shabbos. You did not singe the wick. You just have a new, beautiful, folded piece of beget. What's the din? Can you use that in a Shabbos lamp to light or not? Rabbi Eliezer says, well, first of all, it remains tummy, meaning that this is still a beged, because since you didn't singe it, folding it is not going to take away its shame beged, because you can just unfold it and make it back into the beged that it was. And if it's shalosh al shalosh, which obviously is what it's referring to, if it's the correct size for Kabbalah's tumah, you did not take off its tumah if it was tummy, and you did not make it not a kli, not a beged kli, if it was tar. Okay, so it's tumea, and you're not allowed to light your Shabbos lamp with it. Rabbi Akiva says, now there doesn't seem to be any connection between lighting the Shabbos lamp with it and the fact that it's tummy. I mean, what in the world? And the Gemara, of course, is going to immediately ask, what the heck do these two things have to do with each other? Rabbi Akiva says, actually, just folding it is an act that is mevatel its use as a beged. You have now done something to show you no longer intend to use it as a beged. You intend to use it as a wick, and that's mevatel the shame cleave from it. And it doesn't matter whether you singe it or not. So it's already considered to be tohar, and it's not going to be mekabel tuma. And you can use Shabbos, your lamp with it. Now, I understand the machlokas about the tumah part. I mean, bishlam le'inyan tumah, it's very simple what they're arguing it. Rabbi Eliezer holds that just folding something, which can be instantly undone, kipu eno mo'il. Folding something does not take away its din of a beged, because you didn't do anything to be mevatel it. Uba milte kamaita kaima, whatever it was originally as a beged, it remains now. Rabbi Akiva says, no, even just folding something is sufficient to be mevatel its state as a beged, betule batil. Okay, I understand that's something for Masechet Kelim. I mean, well, what in the world does this have to do with Shabbos candles? I have no idea what you're talking about. Shabbos lamps, Bani is going nuts. Shabbos lamps. So what do we do? Le'inyan hadlaka? What in the world is the machlokas? A brilliant and elegant solution is Rabbi Elazar Amar Rav Hoshaya, and Rabbi Adabar Ava came up with the same idea. We are talking about, now, would you believe it? Here we just had all these dafim talking about the din of shalosh al shalosh and shleish al shleisha and the din of begonim. How do you like that? That serves as an introduction to this Mishnah, which is usually what happens with the sugya on the multi-leveled construction, which we call the Gemara, which is absolutely brilliant. So what happens over here is that we're talking about not a beged, we're talking about something which is precisely at the lowest level of the definition of beged for Kabbalah's tumah. It's precisely 3 by 3 etzbaot mitzumtzamot. Anything that will be taken away from it will destroy its din of a beged. And we are continuing with the strange thing that we saw before about Shem and Sreifa. We are talking about an Erev Shabbos, which is a Yontev. Well, we already know that from Shem and Sreifa. And Mabik and Shem and Sreifa, right? So, putting all of this together, that's your solution. If I give you a couple of other salient points, okay? There's a couple of salient points. A, everybody has to agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's Shita is, on Yontev, you are allowed to make a fire using kelim, because kelim are not muktzah. But you cannot make a fire with broken kelim, assuming that they broke on Yontev, because they become muktzah. Because something that was previously whole now becomes broken, is considered to be nolad in terms of it's now being firewood. It wasn't firewood before, and therefore it's not allowed to burn it. Okay, that is salient point one. Now, salient point two is, furthermore, everybody agrees with Ula. And Ula says that if you light your Shabbos lamp, you must make the rove of the wick, that's the part meaning the rove that is sticking out above the level of the fuel of your lamp, you have to light the rove of that wick. You can't just put the light to it. Okay? If you know these two facts, now you will understand, given that we're talking about a yontiv on Erev Shabbos, you will now understand the Mishnah. So, Rabbi Eliezer says, Kippul did not help. Then that means when you folded your wick, so to speak, on Erev Shabbos, but you did not singe it, you are dealing with kelim. It's a beged. The moment that you light the first little bit of it, before you were yotzei the hadlaka, which needs to be the rove of it, you now have broken kelim, because it's no longer 3x3 etzbaot. But since the din is you're not allowed to light with broken kelim on yontev, and it is yontev, you will not be allowed to light your Shabbos candle to do the rove, which is the minimum that you have to do, because now you're going to be lighting broken kelim, and that's muktzah. Come on, guys, give me a smile. It's so beautiful. The whole thing just adds up perfectly. So now, magically, because of this crazy case that somehow keeps coming up in our parak, and given all of the necessary background, you now understand, well, obviously, if Kippul is not moel, then you wouldn't be allowed to light with on an Erev Shabbos, which is Yontif. On the other hand, if Kippul is moel, so then it already was broken before Yontif. But we said you are allowed to light with broken kelim that were broken before Yontif. That's what they're meant for. You just can't use them if you broke the kli on Yontif. Okay, so Kippul was moel. Libra Rabbi Akiva Sava Kippul moel. Therefore, it already at the beginning of Erev Shabbos here, it was not Toras Kliyalab. It never had a din of a kli on it because you folded it. In which case, when you're being madlik, you're just lighting a piece of garbage. Beitz ba'amaka madlik. And therefore, there is no din of muktzah or noila technically on it. And memela, it would be mutter. Says Rabbi Yosef, oh man. That explains something. I never knew what the heck it was talking about. In the Braita, it says that we need to deal with shalosh ha-shalosh mitzumtzamot. I had no idea. What are you talking about? Never understood that Braita. Remember, it's talking about shalosh ha-shalosh mitzumtzamot. All of a sudden, lo yadana ma'ilchot, I never my whole life knew what it's talking about. Now that you've explained the Mishnah, I now understand that's the point of the Braita. Once I recognize that I'm supposed to always remember that there's a case in the Mishnah limited to Shalosh HaShalosh Mitzumtzamot, that Braita was a secret hint. I wasn't allowed to write it down at the time because, remember, it still was Begeder Torah Shebaal Peh. But that Braita was a hint at how to understand our Mishnah.